Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, the coroner is backtracking on some of his statements in regards to Gabby Petito's death. Second, Barry Morphew wins again. Alex Murdoch's in custody, and guess what? He's a person of interest. Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger. Well, all of his motions to have the evidence in the case suppressed, denied. A career politician is indicted for corruption. Are you as shocked as I am? And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedure, and the law regarding cold cases and current criminal cases. Welcome to the show. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And please leave me a comment below about what we talk about today. And don't forget, if you can't listen to us or watch us here on YouTube or Facebook, you can download this show or any of our previous shows by going to your favorite podcasting app like Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Android, Amazon, and Audible. And we have almost 3 years of shows that you can listen to. I'm telling you, I appreciate everything that you all do. Wouldn't be possible without all of you. Okay, let's get started. We need to support the people that help support us that, well, basically make it so that we can put out a show every day. Please go to crimetalkprep.com so you can claim your 3-month emergency food kit. Now, in today's world of supply chain shortages and unknown changing rules, you don't know exactly what is going to be next. Now, I was reading an article today, and look at some of these photos. These are photos of grocery stores where things are getting a little slim for the pickings, so to speak. This is reality, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not saying there's going to be no food, but you have to be prepared. Nobody thought that we were going to shut the world down for almost 2 years because of a pandemic. You have to be prepared for the unexpected. Go to crimetalkprep.com, and when you do that, you'll get $100 off their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. This stuff stays fresh for up to 25 years, so it will be there when you need it. Now, if you don't need 3 months worth, you can order what you want, but you need to order. So go to crimetalkprep.com and claim your emergency food kit. You'll be happy you did. It's the smart, responsible thing you need to do. Because let's face it, it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. Simple rule of life. All right, let's get straight to the docket. Well, the Wyoming coroner, Dr. Brent Blue, he's backtracking on some statements he made at the Tuesday press conference regarding the autopsy of Gabby Petito. Dr. Blue made the statement, quote, "Unfortunately, this is only one of many deaths around the country of people who are involved in domestic violence," end quote. In a follow-up interview, a reporter asked about the statement, to which Dr. Blue replied, "That was a comment I made in the moment," which is code for I shouldn't have been commenting on things that I don't know anything about. Well, it just shows you, ladies and gentlemen, you have to be careful what you say because people are going to ask you questions about it, particularly in, well, a homicide case. And those statements can be used later if there is, in fact, ever a trial against somebody that's put on trial for the death of Gabby Petito. All right, there is apparently a new witness in the Gabby Petito matter, a woman by the name of Sunny Mason, who works at Victor Emporium. It's a small souvenir and sporting goods store just 30 miles from the Grand Teton National Park. Now, she believes that Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry stopped by her store on either August 25th or August 26th. Remember, August 25th is the date that Gabby uploaded what would be her final Instagram post and the day she last FaceTimed her mother. August 26th is the day before witnesses claimed to have seen Brian screaming at waitstaff at a Wyoming restaurant while Gabby stood by in tears. Now, Ms. Mason says she remembers asking Gabby about her tattoos and that Gabby told her that her and her partner were on a road trip and Yellowstone would be their next stop. Ms. Mason says she remembers Brian acting strange and it seemed as though he was feeding answers to Gabby and prompting her to tell Mason that the two were engaged. She said it felt like Brian maybe felt slighted for Gabby not acting excited when she said the two were engaged. Now, that is complete and utter speculation and would never be admitted in a court of law. But anybody can speculate about whatever they want. Now, apparently around the same time, Brian and Gabby visited Rustic Row in Victor, Idaho, according to the employee, and an employee said they seemed happy when they left. She hollered back from the door that they were engaged, and then I said, congratulations. The next day is when Gabby's mother, Nicole Schmidt, said she received the text stating, quote, can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls, end quote, which Nicole says she believed was not actually sent by Gabby because remember that was the grandfather that she never referred to as Stan. Then on August 30th, Gabby's mother, Nicole Schmidt, received another text from Petito's phone that read, no service in Yosemite. On Tuesday, the Teton County, Wyoming coroner, Dr. Blue, announced that the slain vlogger, Gabby Petito, died 3 to 4 weeks before her body was found, which could confirm that the final text messages sent from her phone weren't from her either. So on September 19th, authorities obviously found Gabby's deceased body in a remote area of the Teton National Forest in Wyoming. And according to Dr. Blue's timeline, Gabby would have died anywhere from August 22nd through August 29th. That is a 7-day window, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lot of time for people to have to explain away when something happened. Now, as you would expect, friends of Gabby Petito are speaking out, and on Tuesday's announcement that the 22-year-old died of strangulation, her friends have made statements saying that it made her sick to the stomach. That was Alyssa Chen. And she said, I wonder what was going through her mind, knowing that she was probably about to die. She must have been so scared. Well, yes, I'm sure she was probably scared to death and was thinking, what the hell is going on? Her fiance is strangling her, allegedly. Obviously, we'll give him the Brian Laundrie, the presumption of innocence, because he has not even been charged yet, ladies and gentlemen. So everybody has their opinion. Obviously, this is a tragedy that could have been avoided. Who knows? Maybe if these two were never together, maybe if the police in Utah had intervened, who knows? Everybody can sit an armchair detective for the rest of their days. It doesn't really matter. The reality of the matter is that Gabby Petito is deceased. Brian Laundrie is missing. And we'll have to wait and see. Now, the search for Brian Laundrie obviously continues, as is today, and officials request that human remains detecting dogs be brought to the Florida's Carlton Reserve. Does that mean they found something? Who knows? But the Carlton Reserve has remained the main area where law enforcement officials have been searching for Laundrie, and several pictures posted across social media showed an increase in the presence at the reserve. We'll have to wait and see, ladies and gentlemen. I personally hope we find him because it would be a great trial to watch just because of the issues regarding the jurisdiction and then being able to actually be able to prove the case with something more than, well, circumstantial evidence that he was the last one there. But the reality of it is we're just going to have to wait and see. All right, Barry Morphew strikes again. That's right, he wins again. Remember Barry Morphew, right? Accused of killing his wife, Suzanne Morphew, was in custody, went to the preliminary hearing. The judge found probable cause because it's very low standard of proof. But as I predicted, the court would not find proof evident presumption great because I thought that the evidence was not exactly overwhelming that Barry Morphy was in fact guilty. Barry Morphy was in court yesterday and he got to see Judge Murphy for the first time since being let out of the Chaffee County Jail, depending on which part of Colorado you reside in. And he was released on a $500,000 cash bond. Well, the intervention technology report, that's basically the people that are monitoring him, they informed the court on September 21 that the GPS monitor was unable to be picked up or any cell phone signal available in the area where Barry Morphy was living. The intervention office told the court that they would be unable to provide the court with any battery or tamper alert information when Barry Morphy was basically at his house. And then yesterday, Wednesday, Judge Murphy ruled Morphy can continue to live in the home next to his old house off Puma Path in Maysville, which is a town right next to Salida, without a GPS monitoring him. The judge's condition is that Barry Morphy has to go to Poncho Springs, the next town over, to have the information downloaded every day. Now, this comes after the district attorney, Linda Stanley, and deputy district attorney, Jeff Lindsay, wanted the court to step in and reconsider Morphy's bond. The district attorney's office alleged that Morphy was living too close to witnesses who are on a no contact list, as well as the Morphy's old residence. Now, Morphy, who's 53, was seen stepping out in a black t-shirt and jeans on Monday, loading tubs of men's clothing into the back of a truck at a Salida storage unit. And Morphy was spotted at the storage unit with his alleged girlfriend, Shoshona Darkey, for the first time. As you may remember, she has her own case pending regarding the potential trespassing and picking up of a package at the residence where he was, Barry Morphy was residing. Now, prosecutors have demanded that Morphy leave the property where he has been staying since he was set free in September and move into Darkey's modest downtown Salida home, where they say he is paying the $2,000 a month rent. The two-bedroom home also happens to be right down the street from the Chaffee County Courthouse. Morphy is currently staying at a four-bedroom luxury Airbnb rental located just a few yards from the end of the driveway of the Colorado home that he shared with his missing wife, Suzanne. The two-story property, which sits in a remote wooded area and has patchy satellite reception, comes complete with a glass-fronted balcony and manicured grounds that overlook the former Morphy's home. According to the filings, which were filed with the court on September 21, Morphy's new residence is too close to his former home and that of the neighbor, a trial witness, Gene Ritter, who he is banned from contacting. Ritter was the individual who contacted the police for Morphy when his daughter said that they had not heard from Suzanne all day on Mother's Day. Now, Morphy's trial is set for May of 2022. His next court appearance is scheduled for November 9th. I'll be surprised if the trial actually goes for setting, but I hope that it does. And, you know, the district attorney must be getting a little frustrated. They didn't get to keep Barry Morphy in custody after what I consider to be a very weak preliminary hearing. And we will just have to wait and see. But, you know, now the DA can't even get a bond revoked. And I say that jokingly, okay? The bond has been set. Barry Morphy hasn't violated the bond. He's been doing what he's been told. They shouldn't revoke his bond. Now, my guess is if he steps out of line and does something or misses a download for any reason, guess what? I think the judge will throw him back in custody. But for right now, he's in the judge's good graces. Speaking of somebody who, well, wishes things were probably going a lot different for them, Alex Murdoch. That's right. He's in custody. Yep. And he's now a person of interest. Listen to this. So Alex Murdoch was arrested in Florida today in connection with the insurance settlements obtained after the 2018 mysterious death of his housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield. Upon his release from a drug rehabilitation facility in Orlando, Murdoch was taken into custody by agents with the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. He is charged with two felony counts of obtaining property by false pretenses. Now, the charges stem from SLED's investigation into misappropriated settlement funds in the death of Gloria Satterfield. Murdoch told Satterfield's sons that their mother tripped over the family dog and died weeks later from her lingering injuries. The death was never reported to the Hampton County coroner, who asked state police to investigate why she was not called to review what she considered an accidental death. Murdoch managed to secure more than $4 million from his insurers, but he only told her sons about $500,000 and then never sent them any money. And attorneys for Satterfield's family released documents earlier this month, which they say can prove Alex Murdoch was the mastermind behind defrauding the rightful heirs of a multi-million dollar wrongful death settlement. Let's just take a break here, ladies and gentlemen. $4 million, okay? Let me just tell you a couple things about insurance companies. Insurance companies are some of the most horrible human beings on the face of the earth, okay? And I mean that sincerely, all right? And I have an attorney in our office that does PI work, and I can guarantee you, insurance companies rarely just give up $1 million, let alone $4.5 million on, and I hate to say it, an older woman with not a high earning capacity nor a lifetime of ongoing earning capacity, which is how you calculate damages. So, I would venture to guess Alex Murdoch concocted a huge story and defrauded the $4.5 million from the insurance company. And I wouldn't be surprised if the insurance companies tried to claw that money back, undo the settlement. Not that Mr. Alex Murdoch has any of the money, but the family is going to get screwed here from this situation, because the insurance company is going to say, we paid the money, even though we were probably the victims of fraud. But the person you have to get the money from is Alex Murdoch, and he has no money. Just a huge, huge, it's a mess. This Alex Murdoch is a piece of work. And the sad thing is, because of his family name and the positions that he held, he, for lack of a better term, probably got a free pass. Because I guarantee you, this stuff didn't just happen overnight. And one day he said, let me see if I can get away with $4.5 million in fraud. He has been working his way up to this. Mark my words, when they go through those books and other cases with the insurance companies and the law firm, there's going to be more and more cases. I don't like to guarantee lots of things in the world, but I would put money on that one. I would put a steak dinner on that one. So in other Alex Murdoch news, as if the news couldn't get any better, after months of speculation, Alex Murdoch lawyers have finally admitted that the South Carolina attorney, who's already accused of orchestrating his own alleged murder, is a person of interest in his wife and son's double homicide. And despite being named a person of interest, Murdoch's lawyers insisted on Wednesday that his client was visiting his mother, who has dementia, at the time of the murders and had no motive to kill either his wife or his son. He loved his wife, his attorney said. He loved his son. The murders were done in the most brutal fashion, according to his attorneys, noting that he had reviewed Murdoch's text messages with his wife and there was no indication of a domestic dispute. He didn't do it, according to his attorney. I feel strongly that he didn't do it, Murdoch's lawyer added. Nobody wants to solve these murders as much as Alex. I understand the attorneys doing what attorneys have to do, defend their clients. I also understand that Alex Murdoch has not a whole lot of credibility, and he is a very manipulative person. He tried to, well, concoct his own death. And will be interesting to see, because he obviously went to a rehabilitation center. And although I've never done a 12-step program, I've known many clients and friends that have. And usually one of the things is, well, you have to kind of atone for your wrongs. So we'll be curious to see if Mr. Murdoch steps up and says all the bad things he did and blame it, of course, on the, you know, pain pills. We'll see. Somehow, I think he will not. All right, let's take a quick recess. please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger. As you all know, he's been charged with receiving and possessing child sex abuse material, and he's pled not guilty following his April arrest and has been released pending his trial. Defense attorneys for Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger had filed several motions in the case, and while the court issued some written orders regarding his reasoning, denying the former reality star's request to have evidence dismissed or suppressed prior to his trial, which is scheduled to commence on November 30th. His defense team had filed multiple motions regarding the evidence in this case, and they were all denied back on September 27th. But the judge issued his written orders and basically said, well, they're denied. The first motion was in regards to statements that Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger, made to federal agents in November of 2019 when they executed a search warrant on the car lot where he worked at the time. His lawyers argued that Duggar said, quote, in agents, what is this about? Has somebody been downloading child pornography? End quote. Could you imagine him asking that? Supposedly has no idea what the hell is going on. He's surprised. But he asks, hey, why are you here? You're not here because somebody's downloading child pornography, are you? Yeah. Well, the court said, although the defense claimed he had previously asserted his right to counsel, the judge said, yeah, no, because Mr. Duggar, rhymes with hugger, was never in custody during the interaction with the agents. His statements were not going to be suppressed. What does that mean? They're coming in. And just like I showed that shock, I assure you the United States attorney will have such shock as well in front of a jury. Really? He just elicits this statement voluntarily? Why are you here? You're not here because of child pornography, are you, I hope? Yeah. Josh Duggar, he may want to cut a deal. Now is the time to probably cut that deal. The next motion that the defense claimed was that photographs taken of Duggar's hands and feet, which show a scar on one of his hands, were a violation of his Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, and said that the law enforcement officials should have obtained a warrant. Well, Judge Brooks denied that motion as well, saying there was no legal authority to suggest agents needed a warrant before they could photograph Mr. Duggar's hands and feet. Well, why? Because Mr. Duggar consented to being photographed. That's right. When you consent to things, you don't need a warrant. The judge said the third motion, which called Duggar's indictment to be dismissed, well, he said that that was frivolous. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, when the judge says your motion is frivolous and had no legal support, that's the judge saying, why are you wasting my time? Okay? And not only is it a good rule as an attorney in state court, but particularly in federal court, okay, is that you show up on time, you don't waste the court's time, and you don't say stupid things. Good rules of thumb in any court, but I'm telling you, in federal court, it is even more important, all right? There's a joke out there, okay, because I tell you, federal judges are usually the most powerful people, all right? And I once used to be in a group of individuals, and one of the individuals we had, it was a group of individuals, we had baseball tickets, and one of the individuals was a federal judge, and he was always great. He was by my son, little dipping dots at the baseball game. He was the nicest guy in the world. And we would always joke that he was one of the most powerful men in the state of Colorado, that he could actually tell the governor what to do as it related to the law. And there's always a joke about, you know, do you know what the difference is between God and a United States District Court judge? God doesn't think he's a United States District Court judge, okay? I know, I hope that doesn't offend some people, but it's, well, it's just kind of funny, all right? And finally, Duggar's lawyers claimed that the investigation by the agents failed to preserve potentially exculpatory evidence because they did not perform forensic analysis of electronic devices other than Duggar's, who rhymes with hugger. The court finds that law enforcement decisions not to forensically search and image certain electronic devices was made pursuant to a good faith belief that such additional investigative steps were unnecessary. So that motion was denied too. So just remember, although the prosecution always has a duty to turn over exculpatory evidence if they know about it, they don't have to go looking for it. And really what the defense attorneys for Duggar, rhymes with hugger, were saying was, well, you could have downloaded that machine and you would have found that there were no images that were inappropriate on that one. So could the defense. The, you know, to image a computer takes a lot of time, lots of space, lots of stuff to go through. And if you don't have a good faith basis that there's something there, you can't even get a warrant to go do it. So I can see why all those motions were denied. And I get why the defense filed them, except for maybe the one that was told to be completely frivolous by the judge. That's never a good feeling, okay? When the judge says this is a frivolous motion, that's where you start thinking, oh, geez, that's not good, okay? We've all been there. But, you know, you had a good faith basis for it, I'm sure, defense attorneys. But Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger. Now would be a good time to have that moment with your family and let them know that you may want to consider a guilty plea. And remember, in federal court, there are no Alford pleas. You have to tell the court that you are in fact guilty and what you did. So you better start preparing the family for that if you're going to take a deal. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to like the outcome of the trial and you're going to face more time, because in federal court, you don't get acceptance of responsibility on the sentencing guidelines when you go to trial. It's a trial tax. I don't like it, but it's reality. Okay, can you imagine a career politician being indicted for what? I know, corruption? I'm shocked. I am shocked. Well, a longtime Los Angeles politician, Mark Ridley Thomas, and a former dean of the University of Southern California School of Social Work were indicted on federal corruption charges yesterday. And the 20-count indictment released by a United States Attorney's Office for the Central District of California, it's alleged that Ridley Thomas and Marilyn Louise Flynn conspired in a bribery scheme to grant a relative of Ridley Thomas significant benefits for the university in exchange for the political figure's support of county contracts with the university. The indictment further alleges Flynn, formerly a tenured professor and dean of the School of Social Work, granted Ridley Thomas's relatives graduate school admission, a full tuition scholarship, a paid professorship, and the means to transfer funds from Ridley Thomas's campaign to a nonprofit operated by the relative. In return, prosecutors say Ridley Thomas, who is now a member of the Los Angeles City Council, supported contracts involving the social work school while he was on the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors. And according to the indictment, Ridley Thomas supported contracts that allowed the social work school to provide services to the Department of Children and Family Services and the Probation Department. One particularly lucrative gain, prosecutors claim, that social work school received with the aid of Ridley Thomas was an amendment to an existing contract with the Department of Mental Health, which allowed the social work school to rake in approximately $9 million each year. According to the Justice Department's announcement of the indictment, Ridley Thomas and Flynn ostensibly orchestrated the scheme from 2017 to 2018, and at the time, the relative of Ridley Thomas was the subject of an internal sexual harassment investigation in the California State Assembly, and Flynn was confronting a multi-million dollar budget deficit at the social work school, according to prosecutors. The indictment claims that in July of 2017, Flynn arranged for the hand delivery of a confidential letter to Ridley Thomas that memorialized an agreement they made in a previous meeting committing to work with Ridley Thomas relatives and outlining the new and amended contracts she expected Ridley Thomas to support in exchange. Now, the indictment does not identify the relative of Ridley Thomas by name, but in December of 2017, Ridley Thomas's son, Sebastian, resigned his position from the California State Assembly. That's right, a legislator. And according to Los Angeles Times, reported that in 2018, indicate that Sebastian Ridley Thomas was facing a sexual harassment investigation when he was able to land himself a job at USC as a professor. Can you imagine? You're a sexual harasser, and then we're going to send you to a college university with all those young college women running around. Gosh, that just seems like it makes such common sense. And this indictment charges a seasoned lawmaker who allegedly abused the public trust by taking official actions to benefit his family member and himself. Now, the acting United States Attorney, Tracy Wilkinson, said in the statement, the corrupt activities alleged in the indictment were facilitated by a major university's high-ranking administrator whose desire for funding apparently trumped notions of integrity and fair play. Public corruption cases are among the most important matters we pursue, and we will continue to investigate and prosecute whenever public officials and others entrusted with taxpayer funds break the law. The division that handles most of the public corruption cases comes from Washington, D.C. And you see these occasionally, mostly the typical cities, Chicago, L.A., but you think they'd go after more. There are some federal officials that are indicted, but I just can't believe that this was the only thing that they could find in this particular case. But, you know, it only matters what they can prove. Now, the indictment also claims that Ridley Thomas and Flynn worked to keep their agreements a secret, concealing from the University of Southern California the funds purportedly funneled through the university to the relative's nonprofit. How convenient. Now, Ridley Thomas has been a fixture in state and local politics for decades, winning elections to both houses of the state legislature, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, and the Los Angeles City Council. Last month, he declined to run to replace Eric Garcetti as mayor. He also has a long-standing tie to USC, where he received his doctorate in social ethics and policy analysis. So, a couple of comments on that. First, you know how I feel about career politicians. They bounce from position to position, really doing nothing. They're only thing that they can claim is that they got elected. They do nothing. They bounce around and they go from position to position. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the problem. Public office was never meant to be a career. And that's my opinion. I'm telling you, that's my opinion. But it should be public service. You should be there for a limited amount of time and then you go home. You should never become a career politician where you bounce from position to position. And I know people, I have friends that have, well, bounced from position to position and they just gotta be in public office. I don't get it. I've told them that to their face. I think that they're just a career politician and that's the worst politician of any kind. They never go away, but yet they always make money for themselves and their family. And like we talked about, there's a federal statute that says judges cannot hear cases where they have a financial interest, i.e. even stock in a company, even one share, and that applies to cases where their family owns money or has an equity interest in a company. I don't understand why we can't have that same situation for politicians. You take the money out of the politics, hopefully you'll take away some of the corruption and the desire for people to do it. And it reminds me of a great quote from Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, one of my favorite books. It says, "When you see that in order to produce, you need to obtain permission from men who produce nothing. When you see that money is flowing to those who deal, not in goods, but in favors. When you see that men get rich by graft and by pull than by work, and your laws don't protect you against them, but protect them against you. When you see corruption being rewarded and honesty becoming a self-sacrifice, you know that your society is doomed." Ladies and gentlemen, you got to clean up the politics to clean up the society. I know we get the government what we deserve, but I think we deserve better. I think we do. Maybe if we had better choices, maybe not just the same old recycled people over and over again, just saying, or people picked by the party who says it's your turn, you're up next, you're senior, you got seniority. What are we, in a union or something? Good God. All right, finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Not sure why I'm so fired up today. Jeez. I don't know. All right, next, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. The Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies were on patrol when they observed a suspicious male exhibiting behavior consistent with attempting to, well, burglarize a car. Deputies then contacted the man, who turned out to be identified as Jacob Benning Moran, and learned that Moran had an outstanding misdemeanor warrant for his arrest. Now, instead of just putting his hands behind his back and going peacefully, oh no, what did Mr. Moran do? Well, when the deputies attempted to place Mr. Moran in custody for his warrant, Moran began to physically resist the deputies. And while resisting, Moran twice attempted to unholster a deputy's service firearm. Now, after a brief struggle, Moran was arrested and then booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on the fresh charges of attempting to remove a peace officer's firearm. Mr. Moran, I'm telling you, dumbest thing ever you could do. Hey, I'm sure you're a great guy. You were probably just looking in the windows of those cars for all those people that say, you know, Scott, don't do the dumb criminal thing, right? That was dumb, okay? If you don't want to go to jail and you want to contest the validity of the warrant, you don't do it on the street. You go peacefully, you go to court, you see the judge, and you get it resolved there. You have no right to resist, even if you think the arrest is unlawful. But when you try to disarm the police officer by taking his firearm, guess what? You're lucky that these two officers arrested you and took you to jail, because they probably could have been justified in possibly shooting you, okay? Dumb, dumb thing to do. That's your fresh legal advice for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Don't try to take police officers' firearms. That's a dumb, dumb move. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.